If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
James and Jennifer Crumbley, the parents of Oxford High School shooter Ethan Crumbley, were each sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison for involuntary manslaughter today. We go now to the courtroom for that sentencing hearing.
Your Honor, calling People v. James Crumbley, case number 22279989FH. Calling People v. Jennifer Crumbley, case number 22279990FH.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mark Keyes on behalf of People.
Karen McDonald on behalf of People.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mario Lehman on behalf of James Crumbley, who's seated to my right.
And good morning, Your Honor. I'm Shannon Smith on behalf of Jennifer Crumbley.
Good morning. Maybe see it. I want to tell you that I became ill last Friday, and I've been taking medication for the last 5 days. I feel fine. My doctor says I'm no longer contagious, but I have a lingering cough that is sure to annoy everyone in this room. I determined my cough would not be as annoying as adjourning the sentence, so you have my apologies. All right? I know this is an emotional day for everyone, and I want to say that I have, I want to ask first, Mr. Crumbley, can you hear?
I can.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure. The court has reviewed the pre-sentence investigation with regard to each defendant, and the sentencing memos provided. With regard to defendant Mrs. Crumbley, have the prosecutor, Ms. Smith, and defendant Mrs. Crumbley had the opportunity to read and discuss the pre-sentence report?
I have had the opportunity to discuss it with my client, and we do have a few objections.
Okay. You're
There's one correction.
You're getting ahead of me.
Sorry.
All right. It's a little unwieldy with everyone here, but I just want to make sure that you went over the pre-sentence report. The prosecutor has had that opportunity as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. And with regard to defendant Mr. Crumbley, have the prosecutor, Ms. Lehman, and the defendant Mr. Crumbley had the opportunity to read and discuss the pre-sentence report?
Good morning, Your Honor. I have had the opportunity to review the pre-sentence investigation with Mr. Crumbley.
All right. And then with regard to defendant Mrs. Crumbley, do you have any corrections, deletions, or additions, both the prosecutor as well as defense counsel? But you may go ahead.
Thank you. The only correction we would have, Your Honor, is that actually on the very front face sheet, it indicates that Ethan Crumbley is a co-defendant, and I would ask that he be taken off in that regard.
Well, he's not. I think probation has addressed, I've discussed this with probation. Ms. Wheeler, what is your suggestion with regard to the pre-sentence investigation? He clearly is not a co-defendant.
That's correct. And in the PSI, he's listed as a related defendant, which is the best phrase we could come up with. But I'm comfortable if we want to move that to a condition 9.01.
Okay.
And then it would list him as a co-defendant, but it was still requested no contact order.
Okay. Are you each satisfied with that? He's a related defendant, correct?
I'm satisfied with that, but I would ask the court to hear our objection as to the no contact provision later.
Sure.
Thank
sure.
you.
Sure. All right. No other corrections, deletions, or additions, correct?
Correct.
All right.
Not for Mrs. Crumbley. Thank you.
All right. Prosecutor, with regard to the pre-sentence investigation, with regard to Jennifer Crumbley, are there any corrections, deletions, or additions to the pre-sentence investigation?
No, thank you.
All right. And with regard to Mr. Crumbley, are there any corrections, deletions, or additions to the pre-sentence investigation?
Yes, Your Honor, there are some corrections. Again, on the cover sheet, the cover sheet of the PSI report does indicate that Mr. Crumbley's son is a co-defendant. I understand that that's going to be changed.
Correct.
We're satisfied with that. Also, on page one of the pre-sentence investigation report, there's an indication that Mr. Crumbley has a substance abuse history. He indicated during the pre-sentence investigation that he has used substances, alcohol, marijuana, but not a substance abuse history. So we would ask that the PSI report reflects that Mr. Crumbly does not have a substance abuse history. It's just simply a box checked yes, Your Honor.
Well, I guess I'm going to ask probation to indicate why they checked that box, but from what I read, he indicated that he used marijuana daily, and I didn't read that there was any medical purpose. There's also some support for large volumes of vodka and whiskey being purchased in a one-month period, so...
Your Honor, I am so sorry, if I may. I did not realize it says yes in the box for Mrs. Crumbly with regard to alcohol use. I didn't know we were going to get into the substance, but those purchases were all made in November, right before Thanksgiving, right before the Crumblys hosted extended family and people for the holidays. So to use those receipts that the prosecution attached in their memo that were not even part of trial, it is unfair, and my client also denies having an alcohol abuse history.
Well, they weren't part of the trial because I excluded them.
Right. No. Well, the alcohol purchases, you had excluded the photographs with the alcohol bottles.
I believe 2 years ago there was a request by the prosecution to introduce evidence that the Crumblys had made large volumes of purchases at a liquor store close to their home. And I don't think at the time the prosecutor was able to link those party store purchases to alcohol. So at that time, 2 years ago, I believe I excluded that at that time. But I'm going to allow the prosecution as well as probation to address that.
Just on the last comment from the court judge, that's correct. I think it was June of 2022. And regarding the purchases themselves, counsel put in photographs of that Thanksgiving dinner. There were six people there. The evidence supported by the prosecution shows 18 different bottles of whiskey and vodka over a 26-day period, Judge. It's factual by preponderance of the evidence that occurred. I believe probation can better articulate the reason why the box substance abuse was checked, but it appears just from the factual information, that's why it was checked yesterday.
Ms. Wheeler, would you like to address that?
Judge, I agree with Mr. Keese. The alcohol purchases were not put into the PSI because we were not aware of those at the time the PSI was prepared. I believe with Mr. Crumbly, he reported daily marijuana use without the use of a medical marijuana card. And in addition, and Mrs. Crumbly's use is outlined in the narrative, and I think that justifies a substance abuse history.
Your Honor, I would object. Any substance abuse was in high school, and there certainly is not drug abuse. So she's listed as yes for drug abuse, yes for alcohol abuse, and yes for substance abuse. We would be objecting to all three, but the probation department hasn't even said anything with respect to Mrs. Crumbly and drug abuse.
Would you agree that drug use should be stricken?
Judge, it says that she first tried marijuana at age of 16 and alcohol at 19, used marijuana occasionally until 2020.
Okay, well, occasionally, doesn't sound like drug abuse.
Sure, Judge.
I mean, for some people, I guess. So I'm going to strike drug abuse as it relates to Mrs. Crumbly, but keep substance abuse and alcohol abuse as to both in pre-sentence investigation. All right? So what else?
Yes, Your Honor. Also, and this is a little nitpicky, Your Honor, but on pages 2 and 3 of the basic information report, it lists the sentencing date as April 9th, 2024 at 12 a.m. Obviously, the court is not open at 12 a.m. We would just ask for the
Well, I would be if I could.
I know you would, Your Honor.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so that's a computer issue,
yeah.
Right?
I don't actually think we can correct that at this point.
Okay.
It's a computer program.
Sure.
Your Honor, in Mr. Crumbly's criminal history, each offense lists an arrest date. Mr. Crumbly maintains that he has been arrested twice, including for the instant offenses. Specifically, record 7 of 8 of Mr. Crumbly's criminal history in the pre-sentence investigation report indicates that Mr. Crumbly was arrested on August 29th of 2017 by the Oakland County Sheriff's Office for failing to display a valid license. I did review the District Court Register of Actions online, and in fact, it indicates that the citation was dismissed on August 29th of 2017, that the citation was issued on August 9th of 2017. So I would ask that the record 7 of 8 correct that Mr. Crumbly was arrested on August 29th of 2017. That's not accurate.
Probation.
Judge, I don't have an objection to striking that, but we do often put in district court arraignment dates under arrest date.
Okay.
That helps us when we score PRV 6 going forward status at time of offense. But I don't have an objection to taking that.
All right, so the arrest date Ms. Lehman, is August 9th, 2017. That's what you want.
When a citation was issued, right?
Okay.
Correct.
All
right. As it relates to substance use, Your Honor, and I should have said this a few minutes ago, in the PSI report, it indicates that Mr. Crumbly was using alcohol and marijuana from 1997 to 2021, but that's not accurate. During the pre-sentence interview, Mr. Crumbly was asked when he first used alcohol and marijuana, and he indicated it was 1997. So I would just ask for a correction that it wasn't used that whole time. That it was a first use, and that it was, and then Mr. Crumbly first used marijuana at 21, then not again until it became legal in Michigan, I believe is what the indication was during the pre-sentence investigation.
Ms. Wheeler, I believe he told you he was experiencing daily use at the time of the offense.
That's correct, until the fall of 2021. It's a bit hard to explain that in the chart because it only asks for a start date and end date, but I can try to explain that a little better in the narrative.
All right, I appreciate that.
We would appreciate that. Thank you, Your Honor. And the last one, on pages 33 and 34, there were statements alleged to have been made by Mr. Crumbly to a therapist on March 18th of 2024. I did speak with Mr. Crumbly regarding those alleged statements that were included in the pre-sentence investigation report, and he denies making the statements that he was experiencing sadness, depression, anxiety attacks, or any of the symptoms listed in the report. The interview was conducted by video. Your Honor, it was a video call, so there was significant difficulty in communicating, but I would ask that those statements be stricken as Mr. Crumbly indicates that they were not said. No further questions after that, Your Honor.
Ms. Wheeler, any comment on that?
Judge, they are in the mental health records. I could put in a statement that Mr. Crumbly disputes this in the narrative and then explain that there were during the video visit.
Are you satisfied with that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are you satisfied with Ms. Wheeler's suggestion?
I didn't hear the word. Sorry, I'm probably asking you a question.
Well, it's probably because I was coughing. Go ahead.
They are in the mental health records, but I could put a statement in there that Mr. Crumbly disputes this at the time of sentencing, and then give an explanation.
That would be great. Thank you.
Prosecutor, any comment?
No, Judge.
All right. So there are no other corrections, deletions, or additions. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. There are a number of objections. I believe Ms. Smith also has some, but corrections, additions, deletions, that's it.
All right. I want to point out that each defendant has a right to and will receive an individualized sentencing in this matter. I want to confirm, because the victims impacted are the same, the court felt it would be in the best interest of the victims, the defendants, and also judicially efficient to hear all the victim impact statements at the same time. I want to be sure that neither defendant has any objection to that.
No, Your Honor, that's fine. Thank you.
No objection, Your Honor.
All right. What else about the pre-sentence investigation?
Who would you like to go first, Your Honor?
Would you like to go first?
Sure. Your Honor, we would object to the narrative summary as written by probation and also the agent's description of offense. It's very obvious that probation did not sit through trial and hear all of the evidence that came out at trial.
For sure.
There is a number of mistakes, and it is so biased that I would just make sure that ask them to, there are so many mistakes. I mean, I could be on the record for 10 minutes going on with that, but the narrative is just not accurate. So I would ask the court to keep that in mind and make a note of that.
Is the information gleaned from the police report? That's how a pre-sentence investigation is normally done. I don't think anyone here, to my knowledge, has a copy of the transcript of either trial. My understanding is ordering that is about $35,000, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone, the probation, of course, has not seen a trial transcript, and in any sentencing, they haven't seen a trial transcript.
I do agree with you that the agent's description of offense is from the police reports and documents along those lines. However, the narrative summary of what was proven at trial, identifying five things against Mrs. Crumbly, is simply inaccurate. Those five things are pointed out in my memo. I explain each of those. If the court does not need me to make a record, I won't. But if the court does...
Well, that's up to you.
It's in the record in terms of the sentencing memo.
Okay.
I'll just give like one example. They're saying that as the fifth reason she should be considered to have committed illegal acts is because she was... Let me get the right words. She was rarely home. That in itself is not a crime. That in itself is not illegal. The information put in that report is not accurate.
I agree with you. The same could be said about me.
Same me? Me too.
Okay. So I agree with you. But I guess where we're getting our wires crossed here is that Ms. Wheeler, and in every pre-sentence investigation, probation takes information from the police report. Like, Ms. Wheeler didn't make it up herself, and she, of course, did not have the benefit of the trial transcript either. Also, the trial transcript does not include all of the information ever by necessity of the rules of evidence, right?
I understand. The only reason I bring it to the court's attention and make the objection is because this is a document that will follow Mrs. Crumbly, and it's important that it's accurate. So I just want to make the objections for the record.
All right, what else? What else from you, Ms. Smith?
Did you want me to go into the objections on the scoring and the objection on the no contact order, or would you like to first? I believe that Sister has a similar argument regarding the narrative summary and agent's description in her PSI as well.
Would you like to address that before the sentencing guidelines, or?
I can, Your Honor, if you'd like. I did submit the sentencing memorandum, which does more fully outline what my objections are. However, Your Honor, in reviewing the over 14-page narrative that was provided to the court in the PSI report, it's obvious that it at least appears to myself, Your Honor, that narrative was mostly written after Jennifer Crumbly's trial. It was not written after James Crumbly's trial. It contains mostly information found in the police reports, in various witness statements, and information from the prosecutor's office, it appears, and I'm objecting to it because it is not specific to Mr. Crumbly. It's not accurate. It contains information that was not admitted at trial. It contains information that was not evidenced during Mr. Crumbly's trial and shouldn't be held against him for the purposes of sentencing.
Well, I guess I agree with you. Ms. Wheeler is always very thorough. And I'm not surprised that there's a 14-page narrative. That information was taken from the police report, and I'm aware of that. I believe that the Department of Corrections always does it in that way. I don't think that there's anyone here, I could be wrong, who has read a trial transcript. I don't know, maybe someone has excerpts of it, but the trial transcript will take a very long time. The pre-sentence investigation is never based on the trial transcript. So I suppose it would be appropriate to include in the pre-sentence investigation that the narrative in the pre-sentence investigation is based on the police reports submitted in this manner, which are numerous, correct, from many different agencies.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is there any objection to that?
No, Judge. Just one comment as far as the PSI. This court indicated every single PSI utilizes the police report and other information to compile the narrative information.
Correct.
The court sat through the trial. The court can make the appropriate record when the sentence is handed down. The jury found these facts to be true. I dispute the characterization that the PSI is real with inaccuracies. I believe it to be accurate. And Ms. Wheeler obviously reviewed all the cell phone records, and those were included. Judge, you made certain rulings throughout the pendency of this trial, as you alluded to earlier. It's readily available to you. Nothing needs to be extracted from the summary. I have no objection to a statement in the PSI indicating that Ms. Wheeler drew information from the narrative or police reports. That's fine. Like I said, it happens in every single case. But I do dispute the characterization, but I understand the court is going to issue the sentencing individual to the offense and the offender based upon the record.
Correct. So we'll add that.
Thank you, Your Honor. It does, in the report, it does indicate a number of reports that Ms. Wheeler relied on in writing the narrative, and then it says, and other evidence. And again, some of the things that are listed in the narrative were not evidence in James Crumbly's trial, specifically the over 2,000 pages of text messages or messages between Mr. and Mrs. Crumbly, in addition to other messages between Mrs. Crumbly and her son and things of that nature. So I'm asking for those corrections.
We could use a different word.
And Judge, again, as the court has stated, it's the same police reports that are used for each. And I do believe it's very clear in the PSI that they are conversations between Mrs. Crumbly and someone else. It certainly doesn't say Mr.
That's correct, Your Honor. I I'm just ensuring Mr. Crumbly's PSI is specific to Mr. Crumbly.
I understand.
And that the court is considering that. That's why I'm asking, making the objections I'm making, Your Honor.
All right. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. What else? Anything else about the pre-sentence investigation with, besides the sentencing guidelines, right?
Aside from the sentencing guidelines, the other objection relates to the no-contact provision proposed between Mrs. Crumbly and Mr. Crumbly, and I'm arguing on behalf of Mrs. Crumbly, obviously, and between Mrs. Crumbly and Ethan Crumbly. This is a family. They have a, despite even having felonies on their records, they have a constitutional right to be a family. Unless the prosecution can articulate a reason that is valid and surpasses a certain standard to allow, to disrupt the family from being able to have contact with one another.
Let me give you some information that I didn't previously have. I've consulted with the probation department, the Michigan Department of Corrections. They have indicated to me that if Mr. Crumbly and the shooter are in prison, the Michigan Department of Corrections will categorize them as enemies. And I put that in quotes, the reason being that they will not, it'd be like two brothers or someone like that. They will not, they're characterized in that way, so they will not be housed in the same facility. So there is that factor. I think the other difficulty I'm having is that I got your sentencing memo at about 4:32 on Friday, and Ms. Lehman's I got over the weekend. So the prosecutor didn't have a chance to respond to that. So I'm not clear if there's, I guess I'm going to ask if there's any objection or if there would, if you'd like to file something supplementally. I honestly never faced this issue. So I don't know.
I can just respond. My only response to this is that we're asking that these defendants be treated like any other defendant
okay.
in the Michigan Department of Corrections.
Right.
And it's my information that because they are co-defendants, the no contact will be in place, and because the shooter is a related defendant, no contact will be continued. Again,
okay, you just mentioned two different issues. Because they're co-defendant, they're a man and a woman anyway, right? So they would, if they go to the Michigan Department of Corrections, they would not be in the same facility.
Correct.
Co-defendants are traditionally not housed together. There's that issue. She's asking about a no-contact order between Mr. and Mrs. and the shooter. So I don't know what your position is on that or if you have any legal authority to support your position, if you want to respond to it later. I have frankly never faced this issue. So.
Well, yeah, that's probably true, Judge. And as the court indicated, this was objections made recently. I don't have anything at the ready as far as legal authority regarding that. My information is only from Michigan Department of Corrections, and the reason why they put the no contact in place, and that is because of the nature of this crime and the fact that they are related defendants. Again, we're not asking for any special treatment one way or the other. We just want whatever the Michigan Department of Corrections would do in any other case.
All right. Well, would you like to respond, Ms. Wheeler? I think you were the one who told me about the enemy status and quotes that would be maintained.
Yes, Judge, and there's certainly no guidebook for this situation again. Those are my thoughts on why I recommended the no contact order, but certainly the court can issue what they want. It was just my thoughts.
Would you like to respond? If not, I don't see a reason to have a no contact order. At the moment, if the Michigan Department of Corrections was able to tell me the reason to have no contact order, I would consider it. I know you haven't had a chance to respond, but at the moment, I can't think of a reason for a no contact order. If the three of them are all in the Michigan Department of Corrections, it would then be up to the Michigan Department of Corrections. But should I be ordering that right now, is what I'm asking. Is there legal authority for me to do it? The options are lifting the no contact order or allowing you to research further.
You just don't want the sentencing to be adjourned, Judge.
Me neither. I'm not adjourning the sentencing.
In that case, Judge, could the court hold this in abeyance so we can respond?
Yes.
That would be my preference.
All right, I'm going to do that, all right? Because I don't really have a chance to respond to that. Just the issue of whether or not the three of them would have no contact If all three of them were in the Michigan Department of Corrections, or if one of them was somewhere else at some given time, is there allowed to be contact either by letter or phone or visit? That's what you're asking about.
Yes, that's what we're asking about.
All right.
But we obviously, if Michigan Department of Corrections is overseeing or if they're in a facility, there's rules they have to follow, and this court doesn't order all of the rules that have to be followed.
Oh, I agree. So, that's up to the Michigan Department of Corrections.
So the court obviously will give the prosecution time to file a supplemental response. We filed our response rather quickly because we were given the PSI last week. We were given the prosecutor's memo on Wednesday. And, I mean, obviously we got it. I got the memo Friday, but there wasn't much time. I would also like an opportunity to either respond to their argument or to be able to brief the issue first, if the court would like, because it's my objection, more fully than I have been able to in here.
You may. You may. Okay. It's not something I've dealt with.
Okay. Recently, I guess I'm just asking what time frame the court would like, or
how long would the prosecution like to respond?
A week's fine, Judge.
Okay, so you are going to file something by April 16th, and then how would you like till the 23rd of April to respond?
That would be great. Thank you.
I mean, they might do some research and find out there's no basis for it. I don't know.
And Judge, I will look further into that and also provide the information.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Judge, I'll communicate with the court, defense counsel information.
Thank you.
Just for the record, I'm just placing my objection to the no contact order for the reasons stated in my sentencing memorandum. I will also file a reply brief on the 23rd.
All right, thank you. All right, what else?
Your Honor, the remainder of the objections for Mrs. Crumley are based on guidelines scoring.
All right, sure.
Would the court like me to?
Sure.
Okay. Your Honor, Mrs. Crumley is objecting to the scoring of offense variables 7, 9, and 13, all based largely on the same reasoning. And so those offense variables are scored the way they are proposed by Michigan Department of Corrections based on the number of deaths that resulted and based on the number of persons injured. And the problem with it is that Mrs. Crumley was found guilty of completing an act of gross negligence or failing to adhere to a legal duty. But when the shooter got the gun and made the decision to shoot multiple people, that took any and all culpability for the number of victims and put it in his hands. So the shooter, if he had gone out and shot one person, which if it's reasonably foreseeable he would hurt anyone, okay, one person might be reasonably foreseeable, the guidelines would be scored far differently. And just as a matter of course, the guidelines don't take into account a situation like this, much like much of the law in this case has been novel and new. So we would ask the court to score those guidelines at 0 points because...
Can you be specific about which... We need to take each guideline individually. It's important for the record. Right?
Sure. Okay, so prior record variable 7 gets scored when there are two or more offenses that the defendant is convicted on. Mm-hmm. And the objection in this case is that the conviction is based on there being four deaths. The conviction is not based on Mrs. Crumley committing four acts of gross negligence. And this is a case where we have an intervening factor. We have an adult who was charged as an adult, sentenced as an adult to life without parole, who took everything out of Mrs. Crumley's hands and made decisions himself. So to charge Mrs. Crumley, hold it against her that there are four deaths, that part of it was not reasonably foreseeable to Mrs. Crumley.
Didn't the jury disagree with that?
No, the jury found that the jury did not find four different ways to say that there was gross negligence. The the scoring is based on the number of deaths. At the end of the day, the shooter could have gone and shot one person, or four people, or 100 people. The problem is that even if it's foreseeable that something was going to happen, when the shooter intervened and made the decision what he was going to do as an adult that was convicted and held accountable for each of those four deaths and everyone injured, it came out of control from Mrs. Crumbly. So we object to the scoring that she committed four offenses. I agree with you, the jury entered four convictions, but the basis of it was four deaths. And it's not four acts by Mrs. Crumbly. This is a very unusual case.
Well, if there were specifically four deaths intended, she would be charged with homicide, right? Isn't that true?
That would be true. Mm-hmm. But as with involuntary manslaughter, so if a person drives a car and ends up killing six people, there could be six counts, okay? But this situation is distinguishable because we have a different person who comes in as an adult, makes decisions, and takes any of what could be possible out of Mrs. Crumbly's hands.
Okay, he wasn't an adult. He was charged as an adult. Isn't there a difference?
Well, yeah, you're right. He was charged as an adult. Mm-hmm. He was held accountable for those crimes. Mm-hmm. He made the decision on how many people to shoot. He went in and made intentional choices. My point is just that Mr. Crumbly and Mrs. Crumbly, and I apologize because I'm arguing for Mrs. Crumbly, but sometimes I'll mention both. The decision on the impact of this case was absolutely not in their control. It was not foreseeable, and that's the basis of the objection. Even if we respect the jury's verdict, they found that gross negligence took place. We respect that. That's fine. We get that. But at the end of the day, Mrs. Crumbly shouldn't be sentenced as if she controlled the fact that four people were murdered, or if the shooter had shot 100 people. That's the objection, and this is a unique issue. It's a unique issue in that there is not case law, and it's going to be a matter of first impression.
Ms. Lehman, do you want to weigh in on this PRB 7?
I would, Your Honor. I also am objecting to the scoring at 20 points. I do believe that the proper score is for zero for reasons similar to those that Ms. Smith stated. This is not a case where there were four separate grossly negligent acts alleged. It was one grossly negligent act. And quite frankly, we don't have the jury here to ask them what they found or if they found that there were multiple grossly negligent acts. There were four counts for the four deaths of the students. And, Your Honor, I understand that having these conversations, I'm not trying to be callous to anyone, Your Honor.
I know.
But the four counts were for the four deaths that occurred, not for four separate criminal acts on behalf of James Crumbly. I understand what the jury's verdict was. I understand that, Your Honor. However, it's not as though a similar situation, Your Honor, would be running, speeding through four different stop signs and causing four different motor vehicle accidents resulting in death. That would be something similar to a concurrent or a subsequent felony conviction. In this case, it is arguably one grossly negligent act that resulted in four deaths, and obviously also multiple injuries and other issues as well, Your Honor. But my position is that this should not be scored at, PRB 7 should not be scored at 20 points because it is one act, not multiple acts. And I don't believe that the sentencing guidelines properly consider the facts of this case. Again, we've never seen a case like this before, and I don't believe that the sentencing guidelines properly consider the facts of this case, Mr. Crumbly's case, or even Mrs. Crumbly's case, to adequately score PRB 7, and I believe it should be scored at zero.
I'm going to ask both the prosecutor and probation if you'd like to respond.
Thank you, Judge. There is zero support for counsel's argument that PRB 7 should be scored at zero. The case law is clear, the statute is clear. There were four separate homicide counts. Four children were murdered November 30, 2021. Because of that, each defendant was charged and then convicted of a homicide count, involuntary manslaughter, each with its own elements. So we've argued back and forth about was this homicide or was it not. This is why the court issued the rulings the way the court did regarding the video and other evidence regarding photographs of what happened inside the school. The statute is extremely clear. Four separate counts. They don't get to have a scoring of zero as if three children weren't killed, Judge. It is clear what the law is. It has to be scored at 20 points.
Anything further from probation?
No, Judge.
Right, well, I have reviewed this, thoroughly the sentencing memos that you have submitted, as well as the pre-sentence investigation, the statute, and the case law, and I believe PRV7 is scored correctly with regard to both defendants.
Your Honor, the next objection that Mrs. Crumbly raises is on offense variable 9, which is the number of victims. This analysis is the same as the arguments I just made on prior record variable 7. When the shooter came in and made the decision on the number of victims, it became not a reasonably foreseeable conclusion that he would do what he did. And that is why scoring that at 100 points for multiple deaths, these guidelines don't take into account this very unique situation where a person is dead, charged and convicted and sentenced as an adult, made that decision. And it violates due process and all of Mrs. Crumbly's constitutional rights to hold it against her that her son shot multiple people versus just one. So we would ask that offense variable be scored at 0 points.
Slayman, do you want to weigh in now, or?
Yeah. I can, Your Honor, and that way the prosecution can respond once, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead.
OB6, again, it's scored at 10 points.
Are we talking about OB6 or OB9?
I'm on OB6.
Oh, wait.
You said OB9 number of victims.
I'm sorry.
I can do OB9, Your Honor, if you'd like, and then go back to OB6.
All right. I went to OB9.
I can do OB9, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
OB9, similar arguments to PRV7, Your Honor. It was not Mr. Crumbly who pulled the trigger on the firearm that killed the four students, Your Honor. I'm making the same arguments. I don't think that I need to reiterate them, but I believe that it should be scored at 0.
Thank you, Judge. Regarding offense variable 9, the jury did find it was reasonably foreseeable. It's jury instruction 16-15, 16-18, 16-10, Judge. Two juries, 24 individuals, 24 citizens, found them guilty and found this act to be reasonably foreseeable. Had they not, they could have found guilty. That's the law. Now, again, there is no justification for scoring at 0. They are homicide offenses. Each is a separate count. The statute is clear. The case law is clear. We provided supporting information and documentation in our sentencing memorandum. The scoring has to be 100 points.
Anything, Ms. Wheeler, in addition?
No, Judge, thank you.
All right, well, I agree. I've spent, even before receiving any of your sentencing memos, I spent an incredible amount of time going through all the guidelines, and I believe that OB9 is scored correctly to pursuant to the pre-sentence investigation, the statute, as well as the case law in this matter. All right.
Your Honor, Mrs. Crumbly's next objection is to offense variable 6, which is the offender's intent to kill or injure another individual. We would object to the scoring of this variable because Mrs. Crumbly did not have intent to kill or injure another individual, even if she was grossly negligent and obviously found guilty of gross negligence. That does not mean she intended to kill or injure another individual. We know who intended to kill or injure another individual, and that's the shooter. He was held responsible, he was charged, he pled, he was held responsible, and we would object to the scoring of OB6.
Okay, OB6 says, or there was gross negligence amounting to an unreasonable disregard for life, right? Or.
I agree with you, but the problem is that, again, these sentencing guidelines don't take into account another person coming in and making those decisions. So if that's the problem, and that's what makes all of these guidelines not exactly fit with the circumstances of this case.
You know, I sent you a case named Albers. Did you read that case? I thought that was interesting. 258 Mishap 578. I thought that was telling. There was a number of victims in this apartment, and someone was a fire starter, a known fire starter, injured all kinds of people there. And I think that had more to do with OB3, but I thought that was a telling case. Ms. Lehman?
The difference, Your Honor, in that case, though, is that there wasn't somebody who was charged as an adult that intervened and made the choice to hurt everyone in that apartment building. That's the difference in this case, is that Mr. and Mrs. Crumbly did what they did or didn't do, but when their son came in and made decisions, again, it took it out of their hands. And if he had made the decision to do something different with that weapon, we wouldn't be here with that scoring. That's the difference.
I don't think they were charged based on what he did with that weapon. They were charged with everything they did and didn't do up to the time that he used that weapon, right? What he did from the moment he started shooting is not really the crux.
I agree with you, and that's why the problem is that because he got involved, the offenders in this case did not have any intent on their part, and so it just makes it very distinguishable from any other case of involuntary manslaughter. It complicates it enormously, and it really does become an issue of first impression in this case.
Ms. Lehman.
Yes, Your Honor. For OB6, it's currently scored at 10 points. The defense, Mr. Crumbly, requested it be scored at 0 points. The prosecution asserted two separate theories during trial, which were both read to the jury. We don't know which theory the jury relied on. If they all relied on the same theory, if they all relied on different theories, if half of them relied on one and half of them relied on the other. Unfortunately, Your Honor, we don't know the answer to that. So the issue that we have is that there are two theories under which Mr. Crumbly could be convicted during trial. We know that he was convicted because we're here at sentencing. But neither of them takes into account the fact that there was no evidence presented that Mr. Crumbly was aware of what his son was planning. There's the guidelines, and specifically OB6, doesn't take into account that there was no evidence presented during the trial that Mr. Crumbly was not aware that his son had obtained access to any firearms in the home. And again, for these reasons, it's the intent. I understand that gross negligence is a part of the scoring, Your Honor. However, it's disregard for human life. There was no evidence presented that James Crumbly had disregard for human life, whether it's believed he was grossly negligent or not, Your Honor. There was no evidence presented during trial. Again, notwithstanding the jury's verdict, I understand what the verdict was, Judge, but the guidelines themselves, the scoring, which is what we're doing right now, this is not retrying the case, this is just scoring the guidelines, and the guidelines themselves, Your Honor, do not take into account the specific facts of this case and the evidence that was presented during this case. So for those reasons, Your Honor, I'm asking that OB6 be scored at 0 on behalf of James Crumbly.
Prosecution.
Thank you, Judge. In Jennifer Crumbly's memo, there was no objection to OB6. We did respond and articulate reasons why. In James Crumbly's memo, I asked the court to take that argument from our memorandum into consideration regarding Jennifer Crumbly's case as well. First, I'd like to address the counsel's repeatedly calling this a case of first impression. This is a rare case. It's a unique case, but it's not a case of first impression. The legal duty in Michigan has been around for years, as has involuntary manslaughter and the law surrounding involuntary manslaughter. We actually cited Albers to the Court of Appeals as well as to this court in our response to the defendant's initial motion to quash in early 2022. Mm-hmm. That case is on point, as is People v. Cole, which is cited and attached to our sentencing memorandum. The jury instruction is clear, 1618 and 1615. Judge, OB6, 10 points are scored when there was gross negligence amounting to an unreasonable disregard for life. Compare that to our jury instructions and the case in People v. Cole, where the Court of Appeals specifically said, acting in a grossly negligent manner where it was apparent that serious injury could result implies that defendant Cole was acting with an unreasonable disregard for life. OB6 should be scored at 10 points.
Anything additional from probation?
No, thank you, Judge.
I believe OB6 is correctly scored.
Your Honor, Mrs. Crumbly's next objection, and again, this is along the same analysis as the prior objections, is to offense variable 13, the continuing pattern of criminal behavior. This case is scored based on there being four resulting murders and multiple injuries in this case. And again, this factor was ripped out of the hands of Mr. Crumbly when the shooter decided to make a continuing pattern of behavior and resulted in multiple harms and murders. Mrs. Crumbly did not exhibit a continuing pattern of criminal behavior. There were not four or multiple counts of gross negligence, and therefore we would just object to being scored at all.
Ms. Lehman?
Yes, Your Honor. For OB-13 for Mr. Crumbly, a single felonious act cannot constitute a pattern. People versus Carl, 322 Mishap 690, is a Court of Appeals case which indicated that a defendant's multiple convictions for reckless driving causing death or serious impairment arose from his single act of driving recklessly. He had passengers who were injured. There was at least one death that occurred. The Court of Appeals found that it was error to score OB-13, even though the driver of the car, who was the defendant, struck and killed someone, and passengers in the defendant's car were seriously injured. So, Your Honor, this would be something similar. This is arguably one act that resulted in four deaths. This is not four separate acts. Going back to my discussion, and I believe PRV 7, Your Honor, running four different stop signs. Those are four separate and distinct acts resulting in injuries or deaths. In this case, we don't have that. It is arguably one grossly negligent act that resulted in four deaths. And Your Honor, I'm not in any way trying to minimize that those students were killed, Your Honor. But in scoring the points, it's currently scored at 25 points for the four deaths and not four separate acts. Those four separate acts were committed by Mr. Crumbly's son based on, according to the jury, his one act of gross negligence. And again, we don't know what act the jury relied on. We don't know if they believed that there were multiple. We don't know, quite frankly, Your Honor. But there aren't four distinct acts, four separate acts of gross negligence that resulted in each of the four deaths of the students. So again, Your Honor, for these reasons and the reasons that I stated in my memorandum, and I do cite additional case law for the court, I believe that OB-13 should be scored at 25 points on behalf of James Crumbly.
Well, I did read the case.
I'm sorry, 0 points, Your Honor.
I did read the case law in your briefs, but I think there's some more recent case law provided by the prosecution in their brief. I don't know if it's Furman or Gibbs. Do you want to respond?
Yes, that's great. Thank you. First of all, OB-13 does permit the court to score 25 points when the incident occurred on one day. There was substantial evidence presented to the jury to show this was not one isolated act. Gross negligence occurred over a period of time. There was absolutely a pattern of gross negligence that culminated in the shooting on November the 30th, 2021. Just off the top of my head, buying the gun, not locking the firearm up, not taking him home when asked, not asking him about the gun on November the 30th, not reacting in a variety of different ways when shown that map worksheet November 30th. There wasn't one single act of gross negligence. It occurred over a continuum. We presented evidence in the Jennifer Crumbly case from March 2021 till December of 2021. In the James Crumbly case, again, March from 2021 to December of 2021. Over the period of those 8 months, Judge, there were a number of acts for this court to rely upon. We do believe that OB-13 is appropriately scored at 25.
Anything else from probation? Again, I have reviewed all the PRVs and OBs and the case law in the statute, and I believe it's correctly scored.
Your Honor, the next objection Mrs. Crumbly has is to offense variable 19. This is a different type of argument than the prior argument, so I just want to let the court know. This offense variable is to be scored when a defendant interferes with or attempts to interfere with the administration of justice. And the reason this was scored against Mrs. Crumbly is because of the claim that she tried to run and tried to avoid arrest. On the night before charges were issued, I texted Ms. McDonald directly, which I attached to my memo, and said,
Judge, I know it's argument, Judge, but we've been over this before a number of times. And the court's a charged felon doesn't get to text somebody.
We had this discussion.
And the court has already indicated that. So I ask we move on.
I'm going to let her make her argument, but we've had this discussion before. Law enforcement does not have to ask for permission to arrest someone. If I have an outstanding warrant, one of these deputies could come up to this bench right now and cuff me.
I understand that, but what the prosecution has done is put together a false narrative that's been repeated by the media over and over and over, and it's been repeated in court. Ms. McDonald is the one who said they were in an industrial building. She's the one who used the word abandoned.
It was a warehouse, a non-retail place that was closed at night.
It was not a warehouse. It was a building that had businesses in it.
It was a non-retail building.
No, there are retail businesses in there, and there are businesses in there that are not retail businesses. Either way, it was not an abandoned warehouse.
Okay.
And then the prosecution argued and put on a record.
I guess it's hard for me to understand why it matters whether it was abandoned or not.
Okay, because the narrative the media has played over and over and over repeats inaccurate information.
I can't control the media, trust me.
I understand. However, the prosecution also stated falsely and knowingly falsely, based on the fact they had a video of when Mrs. Crumbly and Mr. Crumbly were found on a mattress, which is just not true.
They were laying on a mattress.
Right. At the time, though, they made it sound like they're crouching and hiding, and the media reported that over and over and over, and that has been a major problem throughout this case, and why I asked this court for a gag order. And we were thankful for the gag order. It did eliminate some more of the narrative coming out. But the prosecution very successfully painted this picture of people on the run. Meanwhile, Ms. Lehman and I can't do anything more to get our clients turned in. We are desperately calling the prosecutor's office, filing appearances with the court, making arrangements. Our clients are being threatened so badly, they are terrified to just go walk into a jail where everyone is looking for them in Michigan. We plan to be with them as their attorneys, and it's complete garbage that the prosecution has been able to carry this narrative out through trial. And that's why I did attach my text messages to Ms. McDonald letting her know. All she had to do was say, I am charging. She did not let me know.
She does not have to do that.
It's a professional courtesy that most prosecutors do. It just is.
In a case like this.
Evidently.
Ms. Lehman?
Because, well, there's different arguments for each defendant.
That's correct, Your Honor. They're different arguments.
Okay.
So I just want to address this briefly, Judge. First of all, this court may recall the text messages that the court allowed to be admitted in the Jennifer Crumbly case.
At 11:16 p.m.
That's correct, Judge. Text message between Shannon Smith and the defendant. Mm-hmm. We're hiding out. We may have been found. And then the response was, oh, shit.
I object. That's not what it was.
That's admissible evidence.
Right, but that was not texted by Mrs. Crumbly.
Okay, well,
she was already asleep.
Okay, here's the problem with that. Because the evidence has shown, both of the defendant's sentencing memos address the arrest in Detroit. You've suggested on numerous occasions that the prosecutor was required to make arrangements with one or both of the defendants to turn themselves in. I know that in circumstances where someone is charged with a retail fraud, something like that, you might get a common letter. They're not required to do it. Do we all want things to happen the nice way? Sure. But it's not true. Law enforcement is not required to ask permission to arrest people. The fact of the matter is the charges were announced at noon. They knew about the charges. You knew about the charges, right?
Not until after the press conference.
At noon.
And then we were trying to make arrangements.
It's my dime.
Sorry.
They do not have to make arrangements with you. I know that's the nice way. That's the safe way. The fugitive apprehension team was in contact with you. The defendants were aware and did not turn themselves in. They went to a non-retail establishment in Detroit and hunkered down. It's unclear to this court to this day whether they intended to flee the state, but the fact remains that they brought the circus to the city of Detroit. They did. There's also been testimony by Mrs. Crumbly and an allegation by Mr. Crumbly in the sentencing memo that the defendants were not avoiding detection in that building. That allegation flies in the face of the testimony at each of the trials. We had testimony from Luke Kirkley. He testified that he made eye contact with Mr. Crumley in the parking lot. He went back into the building. We see that on the video at the art studio building, industrial building, whatever you want to say, that the defendant, Mr. Crumley, followed Luke back into the building just after that. Luke immediately called 911 at 10:43. I review all the testimony in this area. The Detroit police arrived 20 minutes after that 911 call. Their text from Mrs. Crumley's phone at 11:16 p.m., despite the fact that she testified she took 4 Xanax, drank vodka, and was asleep by 11 p.m. That is simply not true. Numerous agencies, including the Detroit Police Department, Border Patrol, SWAT, the Oakland County Sheriff's Department, and the Oakland County Fugitive Apprehension Team descended on this industrial building. The Detroit SWAT team entered the building at midnight and started breaking down doors with a steel ram. They started on the second and third floor. They obtained a key to the door where the defendants were on the first floor an hour and a half later. The suggestion that the defendants were asleep and did not hear this is highly improbable.
Thank you, Judge. The only addition I have to that is the court referenced the testimony from the trial judge, and I appreciate that because retired Sergeant Hendrick as well as Lieutenant Willis testified very clearly upon multiple questions. Is a sheriff's office function to trigger the fugitive apprehension team? Is a law enforcement function? It doesn't happen because of a request or demand by the prosecutor's office. It's wholly separate and distinct. That was clear in the testimony. I just want that made part of the record. Thank you, Judge.
Did you want to make a different statement about that?
I did, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And it's because I don't believe that Mr. Crumley was assessed 15 points for OB-19 for the same reason as Mrs. Crumley was. Mr. Crumley was assessed 15 points for, it says in the guidelines, the offender used the force or the threat of force against another person or the property of another person to interfere with, attempt to interfere with, or that results in the interference with the administration of justice or the rendering of emergency services. Your Honor, if I read that scoring to be scored because of the claims made by Ms. McDonald's office that Mr. Crumley has made threats and threats of physical harm to Ms. McDonald over the phone at the jail. Your Honor, I'm disputing, and I have disputed, I did it during the trial when this was originally raised, and I've done it since then, that Mr. Crumley has ever made a physical threat against Prosecutor McDonald. He has vented, he has been angry, he has been angry for the reasons that I cited in my sentencing memorandum, but he has never threatened to physically harm Ms. McDonald. He has never said that if you continue with this prosecution, I'm going to hurt you. He has never said, if you don't stop this right now, I'm coming after you. Instead, as I indicated in my sentencing memorandum, the statements made by Mr. Crumley, although there has been some language that may not be very respectful, that may be angry out of frustration for being incarcerated and on lockdown for 23 hours a day for the last 2.5 years, for something that Mr. Crumley and I maintain that he did not do illegally or wrong, but he vented his frustrations, Your Honor, and he never threatened harm. He never said if Ms. McDonald continues that he's going to do something, or Mr. Keese, or Mr. Williams, or anyone else at the prosecutor's office or law enforcement. So he scores 15 points, presumably based on these claims of threatened physical harm against Ms. McDonald, which we dispute ever happened. Mr. Crumley and I maintained that OB-19 should be scored at zero. Again, we also dispute that he was ever fleeing, so even if the prosecution wanted to change their theory to the flight, we would dispute that he was even fleeing, although I understand what the court just indicated and what Mr. Keese has indicated previously. So for the purposes of scoring, OB-19 should be scored at zero. There have been no threats of physical harm. There have been no interference with the administration of justice.
There is a thumb drive of the threats. We could play them, or Mr. Keese could read them into the record. I don't know to what extent the prosecution would like to address.
I hope not to, Judge, but I do need a response in here. I'm not going to read all of them. They're on page 4 of our sentencing memorandum. And we did attach them, as the court indicated. So I know the court has listened. Mm-hmm. OB-19 should be scored 50 points if the offender used force or the threat of force against a person to interfere with or attempt to interfere with the administration of justice. I don't know any other purpose for what James Crumbly did other than to interfere with the administration of justice. He knew specifically that his jail calls were reported. He knew, or at least he believed, that the elected official, Ms. McDonald, was listening to him because he sent messages specific to her. He did it not just in an abstract sense, Judge. He did it while she was actively prosecuting the case. I have had a number of instances where defendants threatened witnesses. Rarely do we see a defendant threatening the prosecutor, let alone a member of a trial team, let alone the elected official. There will be retribution. She's going to be fucking sucking on a fucking hot rock down in hell soon. I'm on a fucking ramp. I'm fucking on a rampage, Karen. Yes, Karen McDonald, your ass is going down, and you better be fucking scared. I didn't want to read that, Judge. That was just a few weeks before the trial. I don't know any other definition what that could be other than a specific threat made to a member of the trial team. We ask that this defendant be treated no differently than any other defendant who would make a similar statement to any prosecutor or defense attorney or judge in this building. OB-19 is certainly scored at 15 points.
I believe that it's correctly scored with regard to Mrs. Crumbly and Mr. Crumbly based their avoidance, avoiding law enforcement while at the art studio, industrial building, whatever you want to call it, on that evening for a long period of time. But in the alternative, there's alternative theories for scoring OB-19 with regard to Mr. Crumbly. Regardless of his ability to make good on those threats because of his incarceration, I still do believe that those were threats against the prosecutor.
Thank you, Judge.
Your Honor, Mrs. Crumbly has no further objections to the scoring at this time.
Ms. Layton.
Mr. Crumbly has no additional objections to the scoring, Your Honor.
All right. I have a number of written statements that were provided by various individuals. I'm going to read the names of the people. Could you tell me the pronunciation of Madison Baldwin's mother's name, Nicole Beausoleil?
Okay.
Yes. And the mother of Hannah, Ms. St. Juliana, is it I? St. Juliana, Kristen Baldwin, Randa St. Juliana, Steve St. Juliana, Jill Scave, Molly Darnell, Daniel Kozak, Andrew Muska, Marla Lay, Olivia Upham, Renee Upham, Megan Gregory, Patricia Cunningham, Linda Russo. Those are individuals who provided written statements, and I have copies of those.
More courtroom coverage coming in our next segment.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.